Hi, I'm Shalaya, and you are listening to Life Minute TV.
Singer-songwriter and pianist Shalaya has just dropped a brand new Christmas single, right on the heels of her recent 5-track EP, Spirit, and she stopped by the Life Minute studios to tell us all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with Shalaya.
So we're in New York, it's Christmas time, so I got this new song called Want This Christmas With You, and I just imagine everybody just decorating their tree, dancing around with their family to this song. It's upbeat, it makes you smile, and I really, really loved writing it with my production and writing partner, Davey Nathan. I think I even remember when I wanted to be an artist, you know, I just wanted to be an artist to make a Christmas album. So I just love Christmas music, and I just love like adding to the soundtrack of memories for people. I had a wonderful uncle, a very courageous uncle, who just lost his battle with ALS this year. But he had it for like 15, 16 years, which is pretty unheard of for that particular disease. And I remember one of the first times that he was hospitalized, we spent Christmas with him. And his beautiful daughter, who's my little KK, I love her so much. You know, we were all together, all the cousins, we were there. And I remember my Uncle Chris, which was her dad, telling us to go sing to the other patients on Christmas. We're a pretty musical family. And so we just went from room to room, singing, you know, for these patients who were spending Christmas in the hospital, you know. And I remember going downstairs, there was a piano there, and we were just all singing and being silly. And when people would actually come into the hospital, they would like have a smile on their face. Like they would come in, you could see their faces were a little down, and they might have had some kids and that were coming to maybe visit someone, and they would just start smiling. And I just was thinking, this is the real meaning of Christmas. This is the true spirit of Christmas. And so that's one that I, as an adult, that I always hold dear. 'Cause I feel your spirit here with me. I just dropped an EP called Spirit in August. I absolutely love every single song. Again, my production partner and writing partner, Davey Nathan, we wrote these songs, just came from the heart. I remember the very first song we wrote together, and it just seemed to flow, and we looked up and we had all these songs, and so we've kind of been spoon-feeding a single every month, and now we decided to drop the EP, and the next year it will be the full-length album. Some people say it's kind of like a happy Amy Winehouse record. It has those soulful sounds, but you know, I'm very much in love right now. So there's a lot of just songs that really came from me being in love. So after I had success actually touring the Aretha tribute show in Europe, I did it in the Netherlands, Germany. Of course, I did it in London. I did it a couple times in London at the Royal Albert Hall. I just said, you know, Aretha is an American artist. I got to bring this show to the States. And so PBS was so kind and gracious to allow me the platform to bring the show to their programming. And, you know, just a little plug, we gotta support PBS right now more than ever. So I just love PBS. That was my 10th PBS special. It's called Aretha with Shalaya and the Pacific Symphony. And it was just really, really special to do that in the States. And we're actually developing a tour right now with symphonies across the country to support that program. I just finished a run at the Public Theater. For those who don't know about the Public Theater, that's where Hamilton started and Hell's Kitchen, you know. And now we're hoping, oh, happy day. We're hoping that will be our beginning, and we'll continue to go to new heights. But I just had such a privilege of you know, let me tell you, it was a grind. You know, doing 8 shows a week is not for the faint of heart. I do feel like, you know, because I have done so much touring, that at least gave me a taste, not the full thing, but a taste of what it means to sing that often and, you know, that duration. So in that way, I absolutely felt prepared. But Broadway is just, it's just another animal, and it's really about being present. And this time I was actually, I played one of the divines. I was Mighty Divine. And it was three divines, Mighty Divine, Holy Divine, and Glory Divine. And we were very sassy and soulful, and really a big part of this show of helping the main character, which was Jordan E. Cooper, who was also the screenwriter and starred in this Oh Happy Day play, find his way as he's trying to go from life into death. So it's really, really heavy, but we kind of brought the joy and brought the laughter and a lot of really, really good singing. My earliest memories of just existing in life revolve around music. You know, both of my parents are very, very musical. My mom is a great singer. She also plays piano. My dad, a great songwriter. But they went into education. So my mom's a teacher. My dad was a principal at one time. Now he's doing counseling. You know, so they've always been in education. In fact, I grew up thinking that everybody's parents had, you know, summers off and Christmas breaks and a week for spring break and all that. So, but like I said, I never thought I would do it as a career because education was what was the focus in my household. And we were spiritual people as well. Church was a big part of my identity as well. So, you know, by the time I was 12 years old, I was the musician for my little church in Bakersfield, California. And, you know, even earlier, my mom says I was harmonizing at 2 years old. And I remember this little wooden piano I had, and I would be making these little songs for my sisters, like around 4 years old. So again, music was just always a part of my life. It wasn't until I went away to college. I went to an HBCU called Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama. And there was a girls group there that we kind of developed, and we had our first taste of, like, you know, trying to get signed with a label, and, you know, we were in the studio and we're writing, producing. And I remember I told my mom, I said, you know, I think I can drop out of college now because I know what I want to do. This is it. This is it. Like, this is it. There's nothing else for me. And she was like, no, we're not going to do that. So I this just shows you how much I didn't think I would be an artist. Music was never my major. It was always just my minor. And so I was changing my major left and right, trying to find myself, and my mom said, listen, you find out how whatever credits, however much you have in that, you get on out of there. And so it happened to be music. And so I ended up graduating from Oakwood with a degree in music, emphasis piano, cum laude. I'm actually kind of proud of that. But I did. I graduated, got that checklist because mom, being the educator that she was not going to let me drop out. But right after, I kind of started going into songwriting, and I was with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Flight Time, and I was a part of their camp, and I was writing for all these different artists, Shantae Moore and Vanessa Williams. I wrote for film. I wrote for Jumping the Broom, and I really was quite happy being behind the scenes. You know, I didn't have to be the star, but it's almost like I believe, my belief system is that God was kind of propelling me, preparing me for that moment. And I ended up, you know, writing this song for a film called Jumping the Broom, called Love Fell on Me. And that ended up being the title track to my first album. It was Love Fell on Me, and Stevie Wonder played harmonica on it. And you know, I guess I'm kind of jumping around like, well, how did I even meet Stevie? But that was through Take Six, very dear brothers of mine, who I was featured on their album, singing Someone to Watch Over Me. And Stevie heard that, and it was just this immediate connection. I belong to you. There's nothing I can do but love you. I've been so blessed to have, you know, had such iconic opportunities to perform at, you know, places like Carnegie Hall, the Kennedy Center, the White House twice. That was pretty amazing. I already mentioned the Royal Albert Hall. That one was really a pinch me moment because I never even imagined that I would ever play that, let alone like three times in a row. The last few years I've been at the Royal Albert Hall like every year. But yeah, I would have to say the White House was probably the most just memorable for so many reasons. I was doing a tribute to Burt Bacharach and Hal David the first time. The second time it was a tribute to Ray Charles. But the first time I brought my dad, I could only bring one person, which was very difficult because I'm very close with my sister, very close with my mom. But I brought my dad, my grandmother, who is now 94 years young. They lived in Birmingham, you know, during the civil rights movement. And so I just knew that this was such a big moment. This is when President Obama had first become president. And so that was something that she never thought she would see in her lifetime. And so I brought my dad, and it just was the most beautiful, historic moment. I felt like I was just walking in a history book, you know. It was just so beautiful. And the second time was just so so life-changing, because I remember I did this duet with Anthony Hamilton, and it was called The Right Time. And we just set that White House on fire. I mean, we like tore the place down. And I just remember while we are singing, President Obama is like fanning Michelle Obama because it's getting so hot. And I remember I closed my eyes at the end of the show, and by the time I open, I see President Obama and First Lady Michelle giving us a standing ovation. And so that is just a memory I will take with me forever. And another really sweet memory was the first time. I remember we were last in line. There was like a receiving line where you would like have a photo op with the president, first lady, and then it was Burt Bacharach. And I just remember we were dead last. Me and my dad were dead last. And I was late, I'm sure. And I just imagined that their faces were probably tired of smiling, you know, because I know how that feels. And so I just remember telling them, you know, we're the last ones. And I will never forget First Lady Michelle Obama opened her arms and she said, they saved the best for last. And she gave me the sweetest, warmest hug. And President Obama, I remember him saying, so I hear you have an album coming out. I hear you're about to blow up. And I was like, how do you know about this? So that's just a beautiful, beautiful moment for me to cherish. And that one, I had my dad with me, and you know, they had a moment as well. It was just pretty iconic. But I wish I had a time machine. I would travel to our love. Okay, so growing up, I grew up in a very Christian, somewhat strict home, and I could only listen to music that was sacred, gospel music. What's funny is I was able to listen to classical music as well too, because I did play piano and I was taking lessons, but yeah, it was predominantly gospel music, so I had to play a lot of catch up later on. So my early memories of music was a lot of gospel music, and actually a lot of music from Detroit, so like the Winans and Commission, Vanessa Bell Armstrong, the Clark Sisters, which is why that was such a full circle moment when I played Dorinda Clark Cole in the Clark Sisters First Ladies of Gospel, the biopic. But yeah, Yolanda Adams, BB and CeCe, I mean, a lot of gospel music. Take Six. I mean, I literally could just go on and on, but those were the ones that I listened to the most. And honestly, before all of them was my mom. You know, I remember, you know, as this little kid, I remember this one of the homes we had, it had this little banister, and there was our piano, our family piano that was down. And I remember her and my dad like working out a song. And I just have this beautiful, vivid memory of me like holding the banisters and like kind of like quietly trying, because I was supposed to be in bed, and just watching them work out. And they knew I was there too. I know they did. But I that's my early, so she was my first American Idol, you know, my mom. And so I had a lot of great, great music to be my upbringing. Little girl in Bakersfield, California, yeah. Peace is coming, and it's coming real soon. So I'm really excited just that my husband and I are officially bi-coastal. So we're in LA and we're in New York. We've got a place in both. And so I'm really excited that I have the opportunity to be exposed to a lot of things happening in New York now. So December 14th, I'm going to be in this incredible lineup, Waiting to Exhale, the motion picture, just turned 30 years old. And so in Brooklyn at the King's Theater, everybody's going to watch the film, but the music will be live. The songs from the soundtrack will be live. So it's going to be really, really cool. It's going to be me, Tamar Braxton, Andra Day, and Deborah Cox, music direction by Adam Blackstone, and that's going to be December 14th in Brooklyn at the King's Theater. I'm really, really excited about that. I love that soundtrack. Of course, all the songs were written by Babyface, written and produced, and Whitney Houston actually picked out every single person who was on that soundtrack. In fact, but Babyface, the only one that she didn't want on there was herself. Which is hilarious. She was like, I just want to act. I just want to be in it. I don't want to sing. And by the time that it ended, it was like, you know, Babyface was like, of course you have to be on this soundtrack. And of course she gave us, you know, such incredible songs. Why Does It Hurt So Bad? Shoop and Count On Me. So I'm really excited to see that come to life on December 14th. Best piece of life advice. I think as a woman, I think humans in general, but really for women, we are so obsessed about time. You know, I remember growing up, I was going to get married at this age, and I was going to have kids at this age, and I was going to do this and that. And I think what I have been able to accept is that time is really none of my business. You know, what is my purpose and my focus is just being the best human, artist, creator, wife, daughter, sister, friend that I can be, and just doing my best and not worrying about these benchmarks of I should be here by now, I should be doing this by now, because when you throw all of that out of the window, you really are free to do what you're just passionate about in the moment, not worrying about how old you are, younger or older. You know, sometimes we always focus on the older because, you know, it's hard to get old. Let's just keep it real, especially as a woman. But I think when you just throw all of those things away, all those societal pressures, you all of a sudden feel free to do really whatever you want, whenever you want to do it, and don't feel bound by, wow, is it weird that I'm starting now? You know, it's okay, you can start at any time. Whatever really keeps you up at night or just makes you feel so alive, it's never too late. So I don't know if that's succinct enough, but basically, you know, throwing time away.
More of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.